Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 37 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here with Sarah Powers. Hey Sarah, how you doing?
I'm great, Megan. How are you?
I am well. So awesome. This is kind of like what? The second part of a two-parter, sort of doubleheader?
That's what I'm calling it, yeah.
Part two of the same coin. Yes, okay. So Sarah, why don't you tell everyone what they're listening to right now.
So you are listening to episode 37, which is a follow-up to episode, go figure, 36.
What?
We are talking about traveling spouses, traveling selves. And, excuse me, and last week we talked about holding down the home front when you have a partner or a spouse who travels for work or whatever, and everything that's involved in that. And this week we're going to flip that right around and talk about what happens when mom is the one doing the traveling, leaving the family. We could also talk about when mom and dad leave together, but I think for the most part, we're going to talk about when you as a mom are leaving your kids either with their dad or with a family member and what's involved in that. How do you get ready for that? How do you help the kids deal? How do you get over the guilt? All of that. So that's what we're going to do today. If you haven't listened to episode 36, it's not a big deal. You can. It's at themomhour.com. But you'll get just as much out of today, and you can always go back and listen in reverse. So that's what we're going to do. You ready to get to it?
Well, apparently it turns out I wrote a whole bunch of stuff about this.
You did.
On the Happiest Home blog,
I'm excellent
years ago.
At revisiting your like former writerly self.
I do remember that mostly because I have to say that some of those posts we still get comments on. Like,
yeah, well, one of
regularly.
Them is almost, there's one of them that's like, I would say it's our top two, probably our second most visited from search, people typing in basically something to the effect of, I'm leaving my kids for the first time and I feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And they land on your post. That one is called Going Away Without the Kids, Feeling Guilty or Worried, Read This. But that was actually part of a longer series that you wrote about leaving. And I think that's where we'll start, because maybe you can talk about, you obviously had 5 kids. You probably didn't leave very much for a long time.
I didn't.
And then when your youngest was a little over a year, you started doing more work travel. Do you want to just kind of like tell that
story? Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. I don't think I left my kids ever at all, except for maybe, you know, like a night here and there, until I want to say William was like 2. I've been a mom for a while by this point. And I remember very clearly, I was pregnant with Owen. William was 2. The other boys were, do the math, 6 and 8. And I took a train trip to Chicago to go to a writer's conference. And I was gone for, I don't know, three nights, 4 days, something like that. And the whole thing felt like impossibly luxurious, you know, the sleep, the hotel bed, the traveling by myself, like the having to remember how to kind of navigate a city alone without, you know, my spouse to do the tipping for me, stuff like that. I mean, just silly little things like that, that I just hadn't really thought about, just hadn't been a part of my life. And after that, I did about yearly, I went on a trip just about yearly, but not, you know, not a lot. It'd be like a week. It's the same conference. It'd be like a weekend thing. And then when Clara was about 18 months old, I started really getting invited to more events. I was invited to speak at different things. And it's funny because, you know, she was still breastfeeding and I, you know, not a lot, but she was definitely still nursing. And that was a big stressor for me. I couldn't really figure out how to make that work. I couldn't really figure out, you know, how was I, and even before her, I remember traveling a little bit when Owen, was still nursing, but with Claire, she was a lot younger than he was. I left her at a much younger age.
I think in this series of posts you talk about, I think she was just over a year.
Yeah, she like had when just you, turned a year. And I think with Owen, I always waited until like 18 months. No, not, you know, a night here and there, no big, but I just, for some reason, leaving a 12-month-old felt like it would be this thing that would involve like pumps and bottles and like overflowing breasts and all this stuff. And that, it turned out, was not really the case. My body did adjust very quickly. Right. So just throwing that out there. But anyway, so I started traveling, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a year instead. And I remember having this, I think what kind of, and I haven't gone back and read the posts lately, but I think what kind of triggered this is I had this weird, I started getting all these weird, superstitions about things, like like imagining the plane crashing, you know, imagining something terrible happening to me. And it took me a while to figure out why I was freaking out, but it was because I was leaving my infant, you know, my toddler, but barely out of infancy daughter. And that was kind of new ground for me. And I was superstitious about it. I thought I was going to die. And I would not be prepared for that. And my kids would not remember me. And like all these, I mean, I had this like crazy, you know, rabbit hole sick fantasies about what was going to happen. And I think I kind of worked it out, as I recall in these posts, that I was just feeling really nervous and, and guilty and worried. And that was just kind of a springboard for me kind of talking myself down.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's so common, right? Like there's a reason why people are typing into Google, like, I feel guilty about leaving my kids. So let's kind of address that a little bit directly. Number one, I want to say that there's a lot of women out there who don't really have time or a choice to worry too much about this. I mean, I have several friends who travel for work as soon as they go back when baby's, you know, 8 weeks old or 12 weeks old or 3 months old, and including breastfeeding moms. I have one Facebook friend who like has funny stories about pumping on planes and, you know, and travels quite a bit. And so, but if you have had a little bit more flexibility and it feels a little bit more like a choice, maybe it almost, I think, makes the guilt factor ratchet up a bit. Do you know what I mean?
That's like, very true. And you're not in practice either.
Right. So it feels like a bigger deal. You you're not in practice. It hasn't been something that you've had to do from day one. So then it feels like, well, now I'm making the choice to leave.
And you're right. When it does feel like a choice, it does trip that guilt, you know, switch.
Exactly.
I didn't have to go on any of those trips. I could have stayed home. But I think, you know, one thing that I think, I'm kind of rambling a little bit here because I have a lot of thoughts that I'm having a hard time articulating, Sarah. I think one thing that a lot of moms do when their babies are really little is we get really tunnel vision-y about what we have to do today to like advance our careers today, right? Mm-hmm. We're not always thinking about the big picture because we have other priorities and our kids, you know, are a huge priority. And so we kind of like put that off. We put off this networking thing. We put off that trip that could be really beneficial in the end. And because today it's more important to be home. And I think at some point I just kind of realized like, that's true. That's all true. It's like that one day is very important, but also my career as a whole is important and I need to invest time in that. And not just the rote time you have to put in, not just getting this
not just
assignment
today.
Done, not just, you know, checking off my to-do list tomorrow, but looking forward with a little bit of vision about it. And everybody gets there at a different time. And I'm certainly don't want to pressure anybody who just doesn't care, isn't there, isn't ready. Maybe that's not a priority for them. But if you feel like it's going to be a priority, and if your career is going to be a priority in five years or 3 years or two years, there's ways to start flexing that muscle now so that you're building those networks and you're kind of getting yourself positioned. And that's important. And it feels like a choice, but it's not a frivolous choice.
I agree. And I would even add to that, and you could say the exact same thing about your marriage or your relationship. So
yes, absolutely.
Talking about doing a girls' weekend that you always say you wanted to do, or planning a trip with your spouse away, all of that takes 6 to 12 months thinking ahead and planning. And when you're in the day-to-day, it does feel sort of extravagant or frivolous or unnecessary. But exact same thing, like talking about where you want to be in 5 years with those relationships, it is maybe not as frivolous as it seems. So I totally agree. And I would just add that even your personal relationships would benefit from the same kind of forward thinking.
Absolutely. That's a really good point.
So let's talk a little bit, go back to like the logistics. Logistics can be super overwhelming if mom is the primary logistics person in the house. Several of our listeners commented on Facebook about how they kind of get the nest ready. And I know you've talked about this, that you kind of enjoy the pre-mothering that goes along with leaving. So how does that work for you? Like what actual things do you kind of do to ready the nest for leaving?
It's, you know, it's changing now that the kids are getting older. There was a phase when I still had a toddler and like a preschooler and all my kids were in elementary. The oldest was in middle school, where I felt like it felt really good to leave the house with some baked goods in the pantry or with some stew or something ready to go. And I knew that John was, while a very competent parent, not used to being the sole parent, changing the diapers and watching the toddler and getting everyone to where they needed to be and all that stuff. So I just felt really good making it a little easier on him. It's not, and I know that, like, I've gotten a little pushback on that idea before. Like, you know, is he so incompetent you have to hold his hand? That's not it. To me, it's just taking care of each other. And he would do it for me in a different way. You know, like before, you know, before John goes out of town, he always fills up the car with gas and makes sure everything's ready. Like whatever I need to have is ready for me. And I just did that in my own way in the realms that I generally take care of. So I'm not as nasty about it anymore. Mostly because now there's just enough people to chip in that it's not as big of a deal. But I still do like to, like, get the house clean before I go, or have clothes, all the laundry done and folded in drawers before I go, or, you know, make sure all those permission slips and things that need to get dealt with are signed and taken care of, and that I've communicated with the teachers if need be and stuff like that. I feel prepared then, and I'm not a huge planner. So it's not really that. I just feel good then when I go instead of stressed. And I have this, like, little feeling, like, even while I'm gone, they'll know I'm there and my love is following, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It's just a good feeling for me. I think if you don't do it, if it's too stressful, if you travel all the time and you're like, come on now. I mean, maybe then it's not a thing for you. But for me, that was always a thing.
No, I don't think it's just you, because I definitely felt like that came through in our Facebook thread. Things people mentioned that you might only do once a week, like you know, well, baths, I think you do more than once a week, except if you're me, sometimes it's only once a week.
Sometimes it's only once
a week. Yeah, but depends things on the kid. That, like, or if there's weekly homework that just gets done once, anything that you can, like, front load to get out of the way. I don't think it's just you. I think that is kind of like a natural, nurturey way to, and I don't think it's overly hand-holding of the co-parent. I think any co-parent who's left alone, as we talked about last week, when it's us, knows that they're pretty, you know, competent if you can handle that all, you know, so anything we can do to lighten the load
and I think also, and no matter what your situation is, whether you're the stay-at-home spouse, your husband is, or both of you work or whatever, we all have certain things we do habitually. Usually I think there are certain, you know, there are certain kinds of homework I'll always be the ones to help the one to help the kids with. And there's certain things that John will always be the one to help the kids with. And so it's almost a little unfair to leave and expect that he's suddenly just going to know exactly what to do, because I don't communicate everything to him because I just do it, you know?
Right.
So same thing, you know, in reverse. And he's mindful of that. And so I like to be mindful of that as well. That's basically exactly what you just said.
No, I think it's great. I'm looking at another post that I think is something really important to address, and that is 5 reasons why mom going away can be good for kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's a lot of traveling working moms who've seen this firsthand, but unfortunately, like, the media wants to give us, like, the guilt story and a lot of other things. But you wrote this post, and I'll just go through them quickly and we can kind of chat about them. But number one, and we were just talking about this, it gives the co-parent a chance to step up to the plate. And that's so true, that I think with any kind of co-parenting situation, and this happens a lot in early motherhood, when mom does everything, guess who doesn't learn how to do anything? Right. I mean, it sounds so obvious. But as families grow, there are still some things, you know, putting hair in a ponytail, for example, that some dads just have never had to do, or, you know, packing the lunches or whatever it is. And most of our co-parents are extremely competent and loving and nurturing, and would be happy to do it, but have never had the opportunity. So number one, you know, allowing that. And just like I can take out the trash when he's gone, even though I let him do it normally, it feels good to do those things and to see that you can. So,
well, nobody wants to feel like an incompetent boob. And, and you know, society has a way of making dads in particular feel like dummies. And I think, you know, it's been a big kind of ego boost for my husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I go someplace and the first thing people will say to me, it cracks me up. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I get this question every time I'm on a trip. Oh, so who's got the kids?
Yeah.
Well, they're with their father. I mean, who do you think has, you know,
yeah.
I sold them.
Right.
I put them all in a closet and threw in a loaf of bread. I mean, so yes, they're with their father. And it's a legitimate question if we're both together.
Right.
I just find it so
interesting. But when you're by yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they'll be like, oh, wow. You know, and he gets a lot of kind of flattery, which I kind of roll my eyes at a little bit, having done it myself for so long. But he gets a lot of kind of flattery, And it's a confidence builder, yeah, and that makes him feel good, and, you know, gives them a little bit of bragging rights, even though I think it's dumb that, you know, that there even is such a thing.
Agreed.
When a mom or a dad or whoever feels really good about the job they're doing, they do a better job.
And practice. Period. Practice breeds competence and confidence. So if you've never, just I think we talked about this last week, like when I used to think anybody whose spouse traveled that would be the hardest thing ever because I hadn't done it, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay. So number two is it's good for kids to see mom having a vibrant outside life. Amen.
Yes.
Especially as your kids are getting older. They just sometimes can't even fathom that you would be anywhere other than cutting up their meat in front of them, you know?
Yeah.
So even, and I think for all those who are stay-at-home moms and don't have an opportunity, that's okay. I don't think you're doing your kids a disservice by not jetting off every weekend. But for if they can see you having life outside motherhood in any small way, but especially if you're going off to do something that's exciting professionally or personally, that's a great, great thing for everybody, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And sometimes, you know, John and I have done some really cool stuff. And we've talked about, you know, how much we're branching out now that the kids are getting older. And we're doing, you know, fun stuff together a lot. And I love that they see that, you know, whether it's professional or personal. It's so funny. A couple of weeks ago, we went with some friends of ours. We went to Chicago. We got a limo.
Nice.
And took it from downtown to Medieval Times.
I have a secret wish to go to Medieval Times as an adult.
It's ridiculous. I've been there with the kids before, but it's even more ridiculous when you go with six adults. But anyway, the boys were at a friend of ours that we often do like swap back and forth, you know, sleepover trade-offs. And at one point the mom texted me and said, I hope you're having fun. William said you took a limo to Medieval Times and you won't let any kids come. And I wrote back and I use that like sad crying face emoji and just sent her like 15 crying face emojis. But it was so funny. And she just was, and then she sent me all the crying laughing face emojis because we're just cracking up. Like, how ridiculous is it? I'm going in a limo to Medieval Times and I'm not taking any kids with me.
That's pretty great.
And I got home and they're like, I can't, they just couldn't even believe it. They're like, I just can't believe you and Dad went to Medieval Times and didn't take us. And I said, okay, well, you'll get to go another time. I mean, it's not the end of the world. You're not owed Medieval Times. It's not your birthright.
Right.
And sometimes we get to do silly, fun things on our own, too. And so, you know, they've all been there. They'll all go again. And it was ridiculous. But it was really fun. And it just cracked me up that mom and I had that little text exchange.
Yeah.
She obviously was not like any kind of guilt trip she was trying to put on me. She thought it was very funny.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, so, it's good for them to have that be a normal thing that adults do, I think.
I agree.
Okay, so number three was it gives everyone an excuse to relax standards a bit. And I do think this is funny because last week when we talked about spouses who travel a lot, both you and I agree that it's great to relax a couple standards in a calculated way, but you can't let all of the standards go.
That's true.
Is funny because I will admit that the few times I've gone out of town, pretty much all the standards go. Because
it's not very often,
it's just like a free-for-all.
I think the frequency matters. I think the spouses or partners' tolerance for chaos plays into that. And so, I mean, even in my busiest travel year, I'm only going to be probably gone from home more than, you know, for more than like a night, maybe five or six times. And that would be like, that's max. That's max for me. So, you know, five or six weekends a year, you know, it just goes crazy and John lets the house fall apart. Not really the end of the world. And it doesn't bother him at all.
No.
And I don't really mind putting the pieces back together when I get home either.
I don't either. You know, it's kind of like when there's a substitute teacher.
Exactly.
Like when the teacher comes back, everyone knows who's in charge.
Exactly.
Like, it's not like the substitute teacher behavior is going to carry over.
Exactly.
Like, they know.
Yeah, they know. Yeah.
I feel like when I'm gone, because Brian is on Instagram too, and the pictures are always of like eating hot dogs, watching TV, like, and then another picture of like eating donuts and watching TV.
And I'll get home and I never want to say anything, but I'm like, aren't those the same clothes some of you were wearing when I left? And did you just throw them in the wash? Like just do that one load of laundry, you know, like the like top of the heap one. So everyone has something to wear tomorrow. Or did they just stay on their bodies the entire time? And I don't really want to know. You know, it's best. It's just best. That's a mystery.
Behind us.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great.
Bedtimes, I have a feeling, I don't even ask. I have a feeling they, well, you know, I bet now Honestly, I bet now that it's so easy to put our kids to bed, I bet bedtimes are maybe even earlier for John like than they used to be. But I bet when it was like a job to put kids to bed, I bet those bedtimes were all messed up. But
all over the place.
All over the place, yep.
Yeah, we all survived.
Yeah, exactly.
So number four was you have to keep your well filled to be a happy, healthy, and effective mom. And that's so true. I think you and I have both come back from things and trips and been like, I can do this better, you know, now that I've been away. So now if you're traveling for a really like high stress work job and your trips are not necessarily as fulfilling or, you know, inspiring as some of the things you and I have done, that might be a little different. So I would be curious from working moms who travel constantly for work, how that works, because I would imagine it'd be hard to come back from a stressful work trip and step right back into, you know, demanding motherhood. But in the kind of trips we've been talking about where you might have an opportunity to go learn something or connect with people, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. And it's actually interesting. I wonder if the people, you know, the moms who are listening, who are the ones who work, who travel for work a lot and who travel a lot more than their partners, they might find episode 36 interesting to hear about the other side. Because it can't be that different for men and women. I mean, if I was traveling and John was home, he'd probably have a lot of the same experience as I do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'd love to hear your, you know, thoughts about that. If whatever side you're on, it doesn't have to be mom stays home and dad travels or mom just travels a little bit.
Right.
It can be very different from that.
Yeah. But and no matter, like, no matter what you're doing while you're away, there is something to absence makes the heart grow fonder.
That is true. Yes.
If you are just constantly around your kids and get a break from that, it may not be a break in the traditional like put your feet up sense, but just that absence. Yeah. And then number five was it gives your children a chance to bond with other members of the village. So whether even if dad's holding up the fort at home, you have the opportunity for grandparents or neighbors or other adults after school and sitters to kind of step in and have your kids see those people as also, you know, competent adults and, you know, people that they're connected to. So I think that is, it's always good to have kids stretch their ability to trust and bond those other important relationships.
Absolutely.
I think we talked a couple episodes ago about our kids with separation, you know, going through only wanting mom sometimes. So,
and I think it makes, you know, if your kids have siblings, I think that that's another really kind of cool byproduct is watching them kind of pull in together and help you, especially when it's that mom doesn't travel very often. So when she does, dad kind of drops the ball thing.
Right.
It kind of becomes that fun part of your fun family story.
Right.
John loves to tell the story about when his mom, who didn't travel a whole lot, but would go on, you know, like week-long trips every now and then when he was a kid.
Right.
And he still remembers his dad basically just dumping like frozen corn, a can of like tomatoes, I think, and then and some ground beef in a pan and just mixing, like just cooking it. And that was dinner. And everyone was like, and then at some point they would always end up just going out to this nice restaurant because he didn't want to do it anymore. And that's one of those family stories that it sticks with him and that he and his brother and sister can tell. And it's fun. I just think that sometimes those things that are novelties, I think are what you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so when your kids have a chance to experience a novelty together like that, it's just one of those really fun bonding things.
I agree.
And they step in for each other too. They help out more.
Yeah, well, I think, and this applies, I know that I notice this with my kids, even when it's my husband traveling and I'm at home, everybody kind of, whatever their capabilities are, everyone needs to step it up a notch, you know?
Yeah.
And I think if that can be seen as a bonding thing and not a burden, you know, you're not going to like leave your kids to more responsibility than they're ready for. But anytime that you can kind of bond together in stepping up your game is good for the family, I think.
Yep, agreed.
So I'm curious, do you have trips planned? I know this is the time of year where you start to like your spring is often
travel-y, isn't it? It often is travel-y. Right now I don't have John and I have a couple things on the books, but I don't have any professional travel scheduled yet. I may. It's a little bit light this year in that regard. But I do have I'm going to Florida in February with my sister.
Nice. Oh, fun.
And then John and I are going to Vegas in March with some friends. And
very nice.
So I've definitely got travel coming up. I mean, these days, I got to say, it's gotten pretty easy. Everyone.
Yeah.
I'm surprised sometimes that people still listen to like this show with me just being like, oh, you know,
it gets better
now that my kids are so big and old. It's just different now. You know, John can even put in a full day of work while
right.
I'm gone. I mean, it's just we're actually now for the very first time. Actually, we hired her a little while ago and had like an overnight sitter, and we had never, ever, ever done that. It's always been we farm the kids out to family,
right?
Or they all happen to have sleepovers and we do something for a night,
right.
Or we wait for my mother-in-law to be around. And right. my mother-in-law is snowbirding right now, so she is in Florida until May. And my sister-in-law is about to have twins, so I don't think surely my mother-in-law is going to be as available okay. to help out as generally, you know, she usually would.
Right.
So we're now, there's a 23-year-old woman who was in the pit band for a play that I was in. So nice. She's a theater band kind of person. So like, cool. I like those kinds of people. And she came and stayed with the kids one night when we went someplace
cool.
and it worked. It was, you know, actually
that was,
great.
When I was growing up, that's all we had. And because my grandparents lived far away, I didn't grow up with any extended family. And my parents, I was the oldest, so I remember this a lot. But after, I would say my sister was like, you know, 3 or 4,
yeah.
would take real vacations. They traveled with my grandparents. They traveled with friends. And we always had, and I actually loved it. They usually got people who were like assistant teachers or like supervisors at the elementary school. You know, wasn't usually like the full credentialed teachers, but other women who were involved at school, or a couple times somebody that worked at my dad's office. And, you know, I don't have any negative memories of that. And we had that a lot growing up. Like, that was their only solution. So
I have to tell you, Clara was so excited. So excited. I mean, she knew that this girl who she had met, you know, just kind of peripherally, she didn't know her, Tara. And she was just like, oh, my gosh, when is Tara going to get here? And then she made an itinerary. And all the things that they were going to do, like this checklist of things they were going to do together, you know, like do their nails. And she had the best time because it was all stuff I never do. I'm sometimes like the worst girl mom. I mean, I like to do my nails and all that. That's fun. But I'm just not – I think Claire wants a playmate.
Yeah, and you're running the house.
And I'm running the house.
Time.
Right. So it's not
too.
Even the worst girl mom. I'm just kind of like – I'm the mom, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not a playmate. And – you know, it was like Clara had this like fantasy that she'd have a big sister or something. And for just this one night, it was fulfilled.
So cute.
And she had the best. I mean, she was so happy. She was way happier than she would have been at just like a random relative's house or something.
Yeah.
So
I
think
and
it's great.
There were some that I liked more than others. And my memories of it is when I was a little older than Clara, more like middle school and high school. But there were some especially that I really thought were like really cool, you know, just like a fun person they watched different TV than my parents would watch, you know, it was just like a different cool adult in your house. But
go ahead. I was just going to say, so that's one of those things now that I'm kind of seeing as a possibility going forward that didn't really occur to me for a long time.
Right.
You know, I don't know why it just wasn't something we did. And now it's kind of opening up.
Yeah.
Options.
Yeah. Well, with so many more independent kids.
Yes.
The one thing that's, I feel like, changing for me is I have a couple things where I'm looking at weekday travel for myself or weekday like commitments. And it is a little bit more logistics. I have 2 kids in 2 different schools, a third kid who's not in school yet. And all of the times I've traveled have been largely over a weekend or a long weekend where Brian might even take Friday off or a half day Friday. But in February, I'm going up just for like a night, like 2 days and the night in between. But it's like a Wednesday, Thursday. And like my brain is still like trying to figure out all the rides. And, you know, if Brian needs to cut out early or something, he will. But I'd like it to not be a different work schedule for him, which means like rides home from school, after school sitters. Like, so that's like that's a new phase for me because everything so far has been on the weekend. And I haven't had kids in so many different like places at once, because once you're talking about rides and school, it's a little bit different. I mean, you've obviously figured out a way to manage.
Well, okay. So I'll tell you how we kind of get around that. When it's logistically impossible for one person to do it, which sometimes is the case.
Right.
First of all, especially if it's a quick trip, like if it's just a couple days or a couple nights, I am not opposed to having my kids come to school late or get out early, especially if it means like, if you can't drop one off, you know, because their school doesn't start till say 8 and the other one starts at 7:50 and there's too much, you know, the times don't work out. I'm okay. And I've actually just let the school administration know, you know, yeah. we're kind of, one of us is just doing this solo. We logistically cannot make this right. work. So Clara's going to be 15 minutes late. And I usually will kind of judge it based on the kid I think will have the least impact.
Right.
Being a little bit late or leaving a little bit early. And it's not, at least at our school, they're yeah. not really sticklery about that kind of thing. I mean, it's an right. elementary school, you know, they're fine with it. I've also done things like if I knew a parent who lives in closer to the school, I will mm-hmm. sometimes ask if I can drop my kids at their house.
Right.
That's a little cool. early and just have them walk to school with their right. kids. And that is such a no big dealer. I right. mean, I would oh, totally yeah. do that for someone in a heartbeat. It's right. just not the kind of thing I would always ask about.
Right.
Same with, you know, maybe your kids can walk home with a friend who lives close by or go home right. with someone and Brian picks them up 20 minutes later. It's not right. even like you're asking right. them to babysit. You're basically right.
– You're just getting like moving
you're
bodies.
Just moving bodies, right? It's so not a big deal. I think sometimes we make these things like the ask harder than it really needs yeah. to be.
No, you're totally right. Yeah. I think it's less about the – yeah, it's just the multiple people in different places.
Right.
And then – trying to get them all to where they need to be without, yeah.
Yeah, no. yeah. And I think sometimes when you think about it that way, like who is around who could just have a front yard my kid could just sit in right. until they can legally walk to school or whatever it is, you know. Yeah. And it depends. I mean, you've got a really little one, so that's not going right. to work for her, but maybe she's right. the one who gets carted everywhere.
Right, right.
And her schedule remains, right. but everybody else's has to just be a little bit different. I don't know. I think that's okay. You're talking about like a couple of days. It's not totally. Going to ruin anybody's – it's not going to disrupt the classroom that badly. It's not going to ruin anyone's academic career. No, and I sometimes there's just good. No other way to do it without hiring a babysitter, which seems like such overkill when we're talking about a matter right. of a half hour sometimes.
Right. No, I think that's all good advice.
If other people have other better solutions.
Yeah, no, I don't think – I think that really is what you end up doing, just cobbling together a series of rides.
Yeah.
And – you know, hoping everyone ends up in the right place.
Yeah, they oh, and they usually do. You know, they yeah. usually do.
That's so. Funny. Oh, well, I hope you make it out here, hint, hint.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, that's coming up. I mean, I didn't include that in my little spiel because that's not until fall, but.
Yes, hopefully
we're probably going to have Beyond Tahoe.
Yes.
Ah.
That'd be awesome.
We'll have more details about that on the show, but look forward to a note. A little notation about a retreat yeah. coming up this fall out Sarah's way.
Out in the West, in the Great West. Wide West.
Yep.
Well, I think this is a good place to wrap up, but I want to point everybody to the show notes at themomhour.com because I'm going to link to all of these posts. Again, like we said, we continue to get people kind of wondering how to handle leaving their kids for the first time. And I think it's a series of four or five really great tip-filled posts that you wrote. So I'll link to all of those. And thanks again to everybody who weighed in on Facebook and Instagram about leaving your kids and how you manage those logistics and the big feely feels and all of that that go along with it. So we appreciate all of that.
Oh, Sarah, you know what we didn't really get into really quick? I just want to talk about this really fast. Mm-hmm. I know I'm a little late now, but we didn't talk about calling home.
Oh,
we
that's
talked
right.
about having talked about that we last talked week. About having yeah. spouses call home, and I did want to talk about this really quickly.
Let's go for it,
because I am not a home like a call homer when mm-hmm. I am gone, because mm-hmm. I found that it would just upset people, mm-hmm. and get. We don't have to get into it in detail. We talked about it ad nauseum last week, but I've found that when I call home, kids who were previously didn't know they missed me start missing right. me. Everyone's right. kind of confused. There's a lot of whining and like,
right.
or they're just not interested in talking to me. And then I just feel kind of like crap. So
yeah, it's the worst. Yeah,
it is the worst.
Yeah.
I don't as a rule do it, but I think what I've also learned, and I have a good friend that I travel with that I've roomed with, Jessica Ashley, and she always calls home, and it's like it's a ritual for her mm-hmm. and her and her son, her one son. Mm-hmm. Now she has a baby. So who knows if that'll change in the future. Really enjoyed that. And I guess my point is that we all figure out the workarounds that work for us. We also talked mm-hmm. about the time you get home. And I was saying how yeah. I always kind of am bummed when I get home late after the kids are in bed. But then when I walk into that quiet house, I'm so glad I'd had yeah. to get home 2 hours earlier when everything was crazy. Right. And I think that we figure out what works for us. And yeah. that's okay. It, you know, you got to figure out the way that makes it manageable for you and doable for you and helps you keep the guilt down and the transition stress and all that stuff. And I think we all, it's like that muscle you flex. You figure out what yep. works. The more you do it, the less guilty and anxious yep. you feel, the easier that it is every time that plane takes off. That used to always be my hardest part was the plane taking off and I'm picturing myself crashing into the runway in a fiery spectacle and my kids are motherless and my brain would go in all kinds of really scary directions and it doesn't do that anymore. So it's, you know what I mean? Just do it. If it feels less, it will feel scary the first time.
But I agree. And I think it always helps to remember that our kids, the way they experience things is not the same as we experience them.
Exactly.
And it sounds really obvious, but if you spend a lot of time around your kids or if your kids are really little and you're still almost like in that we are the same person bond.
Yeah.
It's you forget that like they are not experiencing the same kind of loss. I mean, quote unquote loss.
Your kids are not as obsessed with you as you are with them.
Exactly. or as you think they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're the things that they are doing in a given day are taking their attention in all kinds of different
their
places.
Their brains are exploding with learning and stuff. Yes. Yes.
So
I totally
it's really
agree.
Good to remember that the things that you have considered in leaving your child are wonderful for you to consider and to process, but your kid is not thinking about all those things.
Right.
And they're not noticing if the lunch is packed differently or like they're not wondering if the person who's picking them up is like 5 minutes late. They're not, not automatically worried.
You're
gripping your chair, hoping it works out. Okay. But they're not, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that helps to remember too.
And I think, you know, I think that the sadness is normal. And we even talked about sadness and separation anxiety. I want to say like in a different, completely different topic a couple weeks ago. And I think one of the things I pointed out was that sometimes a kid is just sad when you're gone. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's ruining them or that there's anything you can even do about it.
I mean, sometimes
you shouldn't go. Sometimes when my husband leaves me, I am sad.
Yeah.
And I know I'm an adult and I'm a little more capable of dealing with those feelings, but I also know he comes back. And that's another thing I always try to remember, you know, that I've always tried to hammer in. I always come back. I always come back. I always come back. And that's been kind of my mantra. And it's gotten easier for everybody. The more it gets easier for me, the more I do it.
Right.
But it also gets easier for my kids, especially Clara, who's still very, very into me at 6 years old.
Right.
It's gotten easier for her every single time, too. And, and so it is like flexing a muscle. It's like practice.
Yeah.
So I know that was kind of like a quick way to wrap up a very big separation anxiety
topic,
but it's important.
I'm sure
it's worth thinking about.
There are people out there who don't enjoy calling home or who feel like calling home is stressful, and you're not alone.
Yeah, and I think you know separation anxiety and like sadness over like kind of ripping that attachment apart a little bit is definitely a real thing. It's a real thing for you, and it's a real thing for your small child or your baby or whatever. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't go, and that's really what it all comes down to, you know? I think it's easy to kind of just get lost in that feeling and not go, but I still think you should.
I totally agree. So is that a good place to wrap up?
Yeah, I think now we can really wrap up. This is a wrap up number
two. For real.
For real this time.
Number two. 2.0.
Well, again, this is episode 37.
Okay. Yep. And all of this will be at themomhour.com. Thanks, everybody.
Yep. And find us on Instagram and Facebook. We look forward to talking to you soon. See you next week.
Bye-bye.